Live from Burbank, California, where you can get an abortion any way you want it. It's the Mark Maron Show. And now, he's mocking God. Mark Maron.
I need help. Geniuses, philosopher, kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives, need machines and psychic vampires, weavers of fabric and makers of jelly. Welcome aboard. I know you're all out there, festering, teetering on the edge. I know what's going on, Jim. I'm no dummy. We got quite a show today, my friend. I like saying that because that's what people say at the beginning of a talk show. Wow, this one is one for the ages. Huh? How's that? Does that set up expectations?
It's going to be for the time capsule.
Oh, no one's going to be hearing this anyways except podcasters. Look, Ed Begley Jr. is going to be on.
Yeah, man.
That guy's been around forever. His dad was an Oscar award-winning actor, and he has been in thousands of movies. He has been acting. He was in The Computer Who Wore Tennis Shoes.
Jesus, I didn't know that.
He was on Room 222. He's like a Hollywood kid.
222? Room 22?
Yeah. You remember that? Do you remember that?
Yeah, of course I do.
Karen Valentine?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember it vaguely. Vaguely.
Michael Constantine?
Yeah, the principal.
Yeah.
Michael Constantine. Good for you. Bing, bing, bing. You should win something.
That was opposite the same period of Love American Style.
Love American Style. That's me and you.
And the Bill Cosby Show.
And on a star saying
remember the Bill Cosby Show?
Ooh la, we're going to get some razzes and some grazzes and some greasemaz. Ha, 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 ha.
Love American Style. That's me and you. Yeah, Love American Style. I remember. I have no recollection of those things being bad or good. I was like 7. How long ago was that?
And the Andy Williams Show too.
The Andy Williams Show. Vague memory. Vague recollections. I have vague recollections of the Johnny Cash Show, the variety show, his show on at night. That's way back. That's probably 1970 or something, right? 1969, 1970.
I don't remember that.
The Andy Williams Show. I remember the Dinah Shore Show during the day. I remember these shows. Love American Style. How do we start this? Room 222.
Yeah.
Oh. So
Michael Constantine.
Yeah. He's dead, isn't he?
I don't know.
Yeah, I think he died recently. Ed Begley. Also, my wife found this video of his that looked like it's from the 80s.
Junior or 80?
Huh?
Or junior or senior?
Senior's not around anymore.
No,
he was in 12 Angry Men.
I know that.
Right. No, junior. She found a video, this comedy video, like a sketch video that's not even on his bio. So don't think I'm not going to get into that with him. Like, dude, why are you hiding that? Huh? What's going on with that? The editor of Walfin. What could that mean? Walfin. The editor of Walfin, which is the McSweeney's crew. You know the McSweeney's crew? They are the barometer of everything hip, cool, aesthetically pleasing, and literary in this culture today.
Really?
Yeah, which means that very few people know about them. But the people that do are way cool. Really.
I know about them.
I do, too. I've read some of the Eggers. I've read some of the Believer. I know these people. But do other people know these people? The Walfin is their DVD magazine. This is a magazine. This is the idea. You get the DVD once a month or however often it comes out. You throw it in and you enjoy. It's like a little mini film festival. It's got interviews. I didn't really see any interviews. It's got documentary pieces. It's got little movies. It's like going to a little independent short film festival with some big names. Steven Soderbergh. There's a Spike Jones piece on Al Gore, a documentary that apparently the campaign didn't want people to see. It's very touching. It's nice. It's like Gore at home with his kids, you know, doing regular things, like dad things. There's a piece of a documentary by David O. Russell where he's interviewing these soldiers that were involved in finding millions of dollars in bricks in Iraq. And what sort of happened because of that, because, of course, they wanted to split with it and there was some trouble. And it's got some interesting short films. I thought it's pretty good. I'm going to talk to him about it.
Patton Oswalt film?
Yeah, he's literally on the menu, the title menu. Patton Oswalt is on the, I think it's the second Walfin. Maybe it's the first. Maybe it's the first Walfin where he's just, you know where you see the titles for the DVD? It's just Patton sitting there looking at you, making faces like he's a baby with gas or a retarded person. Also, Anna Brown, Witness Against Torture. If you go to witnesstorture.org, You'll see the work they're doing. They are a group that is very involved in closing down Guantanamo, in raising awareness about what's going on in Guantanamo and other secret prisons around the country, around the world, who's being held against their will, obviously, and who's being held without charges. We'll talk to her about that. Angus McFarker is in India. So we'll talk to him. Right now, a lot happened in the news today, so we want to make sure all you guys are up to speed and you're not caught off guard and you got the information you need. Here's the first edition of the Mark Maron Show Short Order News. American troops have complained that a new armored body suit designed to be worn in Iraq makes them look goofy. According to the story, the suits are to be worn by Humvee gunners who say the armor makes them safer in the event of an explosion, but more vulnerable during small arms fire or in one of the frequent Humvee rollovers. So by goofy, apparently the headline writer at the Telegraph UK meant more likely to die. While visiting Florida today, President Bush said that the GOP will retain control of Congress, and he'd like to see his brother Jeb become president. And as we know all too well, when W makes a wish in Florida, evil listens and makes it real. New data shows a significant increase in the practice of oral and anal sex among American teens and the young. Doctors believe the increase in sexual activity may have something to do with the fact that movies cost $12 a pop, gas is $3.50 a gallon, but licking somebody's junk is free, my friends. Lick that junk. Lick it. Lick it.
Oh, my God.
Lick the junk. Come on, don't be afraid. It's not dirty.
Isn't that your next CD title?
Licking the junk?
Yeah, lick the junk.
Lick the junk.
With Mark Maron.
Mark Maron licks the junk in this one. Plug it.
That's your new WB.
I'm plugging it.
Sitcom.
I'm plugging the junk. See, you can plug the junk, too. You can lick the junk and plug it. That's a fine word, junk. I like it.
Trunk.
Huh?
Junk in the trunk.
I was yelling at my junk last night. Why? You ever yell at your junk?
No. When
I like
you say
that the
junk.
Music's still going. That's the short order news. That, like, there wasn't closure there. We went off on a sort of junk scat here. We were scatting junk. And the music kept going. Clearly, I got nothing to yell about. No, I yelled at my wife after she'd been gone a week for reasons that were ridiculous.
Tell us.
Let's wait on it.
Explain to the audience.
Let's wait on it. I'm an idiot. I am a loudmouth idiot, and I just stomp around like a child. I've had neighbors come over and say, "Is everything okay?" That's a bad sign.
Now he's stealing your identities, Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim. We're going to shift to a serious topic, an important topic in terms of human rights. In December 2005, a group of 24 friends following the nonviolent tradition of Dorothy Day and the Catholic Worker walked to Guantanamo to visit the prisoners, calling themselves Witness Against Torture. When they returned, they launched the campaign to shut down Guantanamo, which consists of public education and community outreach, networking and resource sharing, and acts of nonviolent civil disobedience to draw attention to the plight of the prisoners in Guantanamo and victims of the war on terrorism everywhere. You can link to that from markmaron.com, or you can go to witnesstorture.org. Anna Brown was one of those people, one of the original people, and she's on the phone with us now. Welcome to the show, Anna.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us, and thank you for having such a great website and being so specific in terms of what you do and how to present it, because that intro was pretty much all from your website.
Oh, great.
Now, tell us exactly, my listener, what is the goal of Witness Against Torture?
Well, there's a couple. I mean, the immediate goal would be to shut down Guantanamo and to release those who have been held there. But moving along from there, what we want to say to our president is that torture is never allowable, is not necessary, and you know, in some ways, the president said in Germany on Saturday, I believe, that he also thinks Guantanamo should be shut down.
Yeah.
And I want to say, wonderful, 4 years too late.
Right.
So that's what we are saying.
Now that our international reputation is that of Torquemada, and that they've completely disrespected any of the Geneva Conventions and continue to do so. Now, what is the current number and status of the prisoners down there at Gitmo?
Well, there are about 500 or so. I read an article last week that said the Pentagon had 141 ready for released, so they're down, you know, to in the 300s now. It had been as high as about 760, from what I understand. But we must also keep in mind that they've had boys as young as 13, men in their 80s. So there's a wide range of folks there and still detained since January of 2002.
And most of them without charges.
Oh, absolutely. There's only about 10 who have been formally charged. The Pentagon said that may go up to 24. But again, it's an excellent point. We have to keep in mind only 10 so far have been charged with anything.
Now, let's talk about that. Let me play devil's advocate in a minute, because you get a lot of these right-wing whack jobs who don't care what human rights are transgressed in the name of protecting the homeland from terrorists. Now, in the case of where there is an actual crime committed and they are being held on charges, so I imagine your group's angle on that is what? That they should honor the laws of the land and go through due process, correct?
Yes.
Okay, now...
And I don't know. I will say also that, you know, one other thing that President Bush said is that he's going to wait until the Supreme Court comes out with its Hamden decision, which will probably be made in June, and that's going to decide whether or not these guys will face military or civil courts. It is worrisome if they're facing the Combatant Status Review Tribunal, the military courts, because they have not been so good in the past in terms of even hearing what people have to say. And here you've got the military who's serving both as, you know, jury and judge. So we must keep that in mind as well.
That if it is a military tribunal, there is no due process. It is not a legal structure, a constitutional legal structure. It is something different.
Right. So we have to be very careful in terms of hearing what President Bush has actually said. So let's go.
So let's now talk about the fact that a lot of people might not realize is that though Guantanamo Bay is the symbol of torture in this country and of holding people against their will without charges, that there is still extraordinary renditioning going on. The CIA still swoops down on people in democratic lands and kidnaps them and drugs them and takes them to countries that will enable them to torture them.
Egypt, Morocco, Syria, Uzbekistan,
And that still occurs. We've learned that there is a black site, a prison chain that the CIA uses. Now, all of this is still happening.
And also, I want to mention Bagram prison, which doesn't get as much attention as Guantanamo, and whose men are held in isolation and also tortured there as well.
Now, what numbers does your group have in terms of how many total prisoners are being held in the name of the war on terror without charges by the United States and all their franchise prison locations?
Well, of course, that's hard to tell,
because
these are secret sites, but I would say certainly in the thousands.
That's unbelievable. And that is under that is without congressional approval, that is without the knowledge of most people in this country about it, and it's being done in their name and our names as Americans who believe in democracy is being dragged through the mud by these people.
Yes.
And it's only going to continue now with the CIA's intelligence arm becoming ever more powerful.
Right, because, you know, what's also been in the papers recently is the Army is revising its field manual and claiming that, you know, it's going to not engage in acts of torture. There was an article today I was reading about.
I saw that, Stephen Cambone is going to, he's reworking it. They're going to have two different set of standards.
Yeah. And but what people don't realize is, you know, what you've just mentioned, well, what's the CIA up to, for example, because they are not subjected to this type of review and scrutiny in the way that the Army is. There's a lot of questions the Americans have to ask, and that's why more than ever I would beg your audience to stay awake, you know, pay attention, turn off the TV and find out what's going on.
Yeah, you got to look around for it, because this is a big issue now with this this guy, General Michael Hayden, being put into the CIA by Negroponte, and the fact that Donald Rumsfeld's Defense Intelligence Agency is sanctioned to operate underneath the radar of legal scrutiny. And they are doing what you're saying. I read today that Cambone is trying to have a different set of standards of treatment for terrorist suspects and regular prisoners.
Right. And one thing I'd also, you're kind of alluding to, what's a little frightening for me is that the architects of torture, far from being removed from office, actually have been promoted. For example, Gonzalez, now Attorney General, John Yoo, who had been the Justice Department lawyer who argued in the name of torture, is a professor at UC Berkeley. Wolfowitz is in the World Bank. Rumsfeld still remains. You know, none of these guys have been removed or sanctioned for what they promote, and that is the work of torture. And again, it's just unacceptable. So when we talk about, President Bush said, you know, Guantanamo's going to shut down, what I see is the same folks in power.
Absolutely. And that guy, the Stephen Cambone over there, the undersecretary in charge of the DIA, his underling is that guy, General Boykin, who actually believes he's fighting for Jesus.
Yes.
Now, let's talk about what people can do, how they can get involved, Anna Brown, from witnesstorture.org. What can we do?
Well, first of all, as we both kind of mentioned, stay awake, pay attention, read as much as possible. I mean, one thing that's a little frightening for me is in terms of precedent, it was Hitler who used the burning of the Reichstag to declare a perpetual war on terrorism and then suspended habeas corpus and other rights. So, you know, we're not in a great trajectory here. And so, you know, be aware of history. Find out what's going on as much as possible.
So whether you're saying this administration was complicit or through negligence or actually caused the events of 9/11, it was certainly used in a similar way as Hitler used the Reichstag.
Yeah, and what we have to get a grip on is fear, because when people are fearful, they are easily manipulated.
Do anything.
Then anything goes. And so that's another practice I would engage in.
How rational, being a rational examination
of fear.
Right.
So thanks for bringing that up.
How rational is your fear, and where are you getting your information?
Right. You know, when you think about, I mean, first of all, what kind of a world are we helping to create? Now, on the one hand, you know, a friend of mine is Colleen Kelly. Her brother died in the World Trade Center. She founded September 11th Families for Peaceful Tomorrows.
Right.
And, you know, so you see people who've responded differently to severe pain and the agony of the death.
Yeah.
And I want to say, you know, in terms of numbers, although you don't want to go this route because a life is a life, but, you know, The Lancet says, look, there's 100,000 dead in Iraq, you know, thousands of Afghanis killed. We're creating a world in which people are going to be enraged and full of fear and pain.
All right, hold that thought, and we'll come back, Anna Brown.
Now back to a man who's cleaning up smog with his ions, Mark Maron.
Yeah, it's a genetic thing. I have. Our guest on the phone is Anna Brown, witnesstorture.org. Witness Against Torture is the organization. We're talking about staying awake, keeping your eyes open, getting your information from a few different sources, and making the best assessment of what's going on in the world. Of course, always adding a few zeros to whatever numbers the government gives us, right?
Absolutely.
I'm looking at some of the things that you've got on the website of what you can do. Tell me about this film, The Road to Guantanamo. Is that going to be opening where people can see it soon?
Yes. Right now, it's in New York as part of the Tribeca Film Festival. I didn't see this weekend. I was down in Alabama giving talks at two universities about the work of Witness Against Torture, but members of our community were outside of the film, and we've got information of how to join Witness Against Torture, T-shirts for sale that we're hoping that people across the country will be wearing. And then from what I understand, the film will be opening, I believe, at the end of June. So
okay.
It's something that people should see. Also, I want to recommend Alfred McCoy's book, A Question of Torture.
Okay, great, great. Mm-hmm. Definitely, we'll put that out there. Now, how are you received when you go speak at a college? Is there resistance? Are they? What are the groups like? What have you experienced with that?
You know, one of the things that McCoy says that's a little frightening is in his book is that Americans are developing a taste for torture. Now, perhaps these same Americans are not coming to the talks, but I've seen a couple of things. One is absolute disbelief. You know, I think part of it is that Americans do not know what's going on. They're unaware of this, and so they're shocked, stymied. They can't believe that this is happening in their country. And when they do find out, they do want to take action to stop it. At least that's been my experience. Yes, you know, you'll have the occasional naysayer, but at least where I've spoken, and I've given about 10 to 15 talks on this so far, it's generally been shock, disbelief, and then let's take action. But see, that's the step that really has to happen if things are going to change. And there are any number of ways people can take action.
One of those ways is to, you know, change the House of Representatives, and maybe we can start to really investigate these people that you named in the last segment.
Yes.
And to get that going, and also to make sure you get the word out. You've got a good list of things you can do at the site. I'll send people there, and that's witnesstorture.org. And it was great having you on the show. It was great talking to you.
Absolutely.
Thank you
so much.
You bet. You take care.
I will. You too.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
That was Anna Brown, again, witnesstorture.org. Witness Against Torture is the group doing the righteous thing, trying to at least regain some of our reputation in the world by getting rid of this. And this all, I think, should be rallying points moving towards the midterm elections, Jim. This is just my belief. I mean, this is another one of those points where it's like, why don't they run on this? You know, even if the Republicans spin it like, well, they're terrorists, it's our global reputation. It is being an international example of how a civil society is supposed to behave. What happened to running on something like that? We should be the beacon of progress and light in the world, not this horrendous declining civilization mired in corruption with a piggish sense of consumption, you know, shamelessly destroying the environment and thinking about, you know, reinvigorating our nuclear program. We're on the brink of causing Armageddon with Iran. It's just there's so many things that don't make me ashamed, but I cannot cloister. You know, I cannot be one of these hipper kind of condescending people that's sort of like, dude, you know, there's so many things going on in the world. There's so many things wrong with this country. But in our little group right here, who we appreciate, like, you know, really good references and comedy routines and movies that are so esoteric that no one likes them but us. Everything's pretty cool, you know. So even if Armageddon happens, at least we'll have each other in our horn-rimmed glasses. You following me, man?
I think I know who you're talking about. You want me to name names?
No.
I'll name those people.
No, you don't have to.
I don't think they're funny either. Books those guys anyway?
This will make you happy. I'm going to be doing a show at one of those places tonight. Look at this. The big Divine Strake nuclear test, or not nuclear test, but the test at the nuclear test site in Nevada has been postponed at least 3 weeks, hopefully for longer. It will not be conducted earlier than June 23rd. It was originally scheduled for June 2nd. And the reason is that some people brought up a lawsuit. In documents filed Monday with the U.S. District Court in Las Vegas, Federal Justice Department lawyers sought to push back from May 23rd until early June a hearing on a lawsuit filed by the Winnemucca Indian Colony and several Nevada and Utah downwinders to block the blast.
Damn lawyers.
The judge did not issue an immediate ruling. Nevada Division of Environmental Protection spokesman, this guy Dante Pistone, also said Tuesday his agency was reviewing a revised environmental assessment that test planners filed Friday. The bottom line is, which I say a lot, I know, I'll get over it, is that this lawsuit that was filed in April accused the government of skipping public comment and failing to complete required environmental studies before picking a date and place for the explosion. And on top of that, the Western Shore Tribe never acknowledged turning over the land to the U.S.
Just another frivolous lawsuit clogging up a legal system.
Yeah, right. You're taking the other side. That's good. I understand the humor
Look,
of that.
Look, man, you know, I'm weighing the possibilities of who really might win this whole thing, the battle of life.
But the bottom, now stop with the bottom line already. How many bottom lines are there, and why do I think I know all of them? There's so few things.
The crux of the matter is.
I know how to hit bottom, and I think that's the bottom line, but that bottom line is not any place people want to go. The thing that's exciting about this is that you've got a group of people that realize that if they blow this thing up at this test site, that they're going to be sending radioactive dust into the air that's been left over from tests that were done there from 1951 to 1992, nuclear tests. All right, these are regular people that are concerned, and you have an Indian tribe involved in a dispute over whether or not they even allowed. There was even a piece of paper that enabled the government to do these tests there in the first place. So this this might hold things up a little bit. And this is decent community democratic resistance. It's like that woman we talked to about a lot of the Indian actions that are going on, is that some of these Native Americans are able to really facilitate some change and stifle the machinations of the big hate machine.
I think the important thing to note here is that the Indian nation is a separate nation from America, and if they are threatening this country in such a manner, then we have the right to go to war with them.
With the Indians?
Yes.
Where are you coming from?
We have the right to call them terrorists and
again?
Go to war with them.
We're gonna go.
I'm just saying.
I just think it's nice, and I think hopefully we're going to get in touch with Cindy Sheehan because they were planning on going down there. So I guess that trip has been put on hold for a little while. What else have I got? I already talked to. Well, look, I can't be more happy about. Did I come clean about why I got mad at my wife? I didn't, did I?
Because, yes, I know why. Because of the thing. the thing that's been happening, and
it's just so stupid.
Thing.
When they go away for a week or you're separated for a while, for some reason, there's some part of me that instead of just going, I'm so happy you're home, let's have some sex. I have to go through some weird kind of the part of me literally was saying, why did you go away? Why did you leave me? Even if it's for a week. But here was the weird thing. It's like we're having all this stuff done on our house. All right. And I've got Ernie over there.
Got the new gate.
That's a nice gate.
Oh, man. I've seen gates.
It's a wooden gate, but it's pretty. And she picked the right guy to do that, And I have a little house. It's a modest house. But we're painting. We're getting some stuff done. We're putting a fence up. So I can enjoy living at my new house. And my wife is in New York, and she's talking to friends who are buying a new apartment. And someone she talked to said, well, that's, you got to move out of your starter house after 2 years. So we're doing all this work, and I get on the phone, and I'm saying how nice the painting look. And she's like, we should really, maybe think about getting another house. And I'm like, I just snapped. It was one of those sort of
starter
things.
Starter house?
Well, I just snapped. Well, that's what people call them.
What the hell is that? Starter house?
It's your first house.
Like to get a starter apartment. What the hell is a starter house?
Well, but some people are more responsible than you in how they've led their life.
This is in the 1950s, for God's sakes.
It kind of is
starter
a 19...
Starter house?
It kind of
is. Man, who can afford a house?
People that live responsible lives and think about their future.
I've paid all my bills, and look where it's gotten me. In the toilet!
Yeah. What about that attitude, buddy?
Yeah, that attitude is called reality! I'm not some naive boop!
Yeah.
Yeah,
I like when you beep yourself.
Give me a break, starter house. Where is she? I'll yell at her.
Well, this is sort of where I was coming from, is that
home after all, being gone so long.
For a week.
She brings the starter house thing on me.
Yeah.
Screw her.
All right, take it easy.
Where's my love? I'm hungry.
I didn't do that. I did. It just got ugly because I somehow got sensitive about it because I'm like, why are we doing all this work? The place looks great. I want to live here. That's how I think. That's how I think it's. I dig in. Like, I will live a place someplace forever. I wouldn't have never bought a house. I would still be in an apartment.
It's a very nice place.
Thank you. And I don't know how the hell people move every couple of years. The aggravation of moving after you get sort of connected to a place. I mean, I don't want to die in that house. I don't want to be 70 in that house. I don't want to die in there either.
How would she like it if you came home and talked about a starter wife?
Yeah.
Well, that's a point, huh? Guys, you on my side?
I had one of those.
I know.
And I ran into her a couple of weeks ago.
She's living in my neighborhood, you say.
Have you seen her?
No, I haven't. I haven't.
Oh, I've been having weird dreams lately. There's sometimes where you have dreams where you're like, is that real? What happened? I don't know. Are you feeling age at all, Jim? I mean, do you feel like...
I only feel age when people say, hey, you're that old?
Do you feel halfway done?
No, I don't.
All right, that's good.
Because I don't even have a starter house.
Yeah, you need to get the starter. That is not that unusual.
I want a friggin' starter house before I can
start.
You've
heard of that, haven't you? You've heard of starter house. It's usually a smaller house and usually refers to when people get families and they move on to the larger place to accommodate their family.
Bill's Sleepy Bill Collar, the hippie freako behind he's yeah. got a huge house.
I know.
Man, that thing is like, you know, like the Matterhorn or something. It's,
Jim.
Hey,
Jim.
What? Don't turn that music down.
Jim, get in the game, man.
The guy's got a
Jim,
huge mansion.
You got to get in the game, man. What are you doing wrong?
Man.
Angus McBarker's coming up next from India.
Now back to the number one cure for eye fungus, Mark Maron.
Okay, Jim. All right, that's fine. Ed Begley Jr. is going to be in here. I'm kind of I'm looking forward to meeting him.
Oh yeah,
well, he's a very recognizable character. So I saw him walking down the street. That no one does that here.
He's a friend of the earth.
He must be a friend of the earth to be walking down the street. In, I don't know where the hell, it was out on Ventura or somewhere, Studio City, I'm not sure, I don't remember.
He's Mother Nature's child.
Very recognizable guy, though. You can recognize that guy anywhere. That's Ed Begley. I don't know if everybody knows his name, but you certainly...
Ed Begley Jr.
Ed Begley Jr.
You could also recognize Ed Begley.
I can't picture his...
Very recognizable man. You'd recognize him.
I have to look at 12 Angry Men again. Anyways, I don't care what anybody says. The thought of Jeb Bush running for president frightens me. He can't possibly win... He cannot possibly be president. You know, George was down there the other day, faux Christian, ex-blow monkey puppet of the Cheney regime's neocon death cult was down there.
What are you getting at?
I'm saying he's down there, you know, blowing smoke up his brother's patoot, saying that you're the next in line. Daddy would be proud. I'm behind you.
Why not the whole damn family?
No, the hell with him. I just hope that Jeb Bush is dirty enough. The idea is that he's got good approval ratings in Florida, and his brother just came out with a 31 today. Horrendous, but beautiful. 31% approval rating. No, there's only a couple people that have gone lower. Nixon and Carter at different points in their career. And his dad was pretty damn low when he was running for re-election. But how could this be a dynasty? How could this bunch of morons be a dynasty in this country?
Americans love families.
Oh,
it's a family thing. You know, you have one. It doesn't matter if they're horrible.
And Hillary Clinton is becoming Republican?
Oh, becoming? What are you talking about?
She is a Republican.
She's always been. She's, you know, the best Republican Democrat president we are. You heard that before. You know, that's the way I believe.
I had no idea about some of this stuff, though. I had no idea that President Clinton, that the first President Clinton really helped, you know, because she is going to be, he is going to be speaking. She's going to be at a fundraiser being sponsored by Rupert Murdoch. And the connection is that apparently the Telecommunications Reform Act of 1996 that was drafted by lobbyists for the media industry was supported by Clinton and politicians of both parties is the one that loosened the constraints on these regulations that enabled Clear Channel to go from 40 radio stations to 1,200 and to allow right-wing broadcasters like Sinclair to go from 11 to 60. So on some level, you know, Murdoch owes the Clinton something, but I don't know why she would do this publicly or why she would. It just baffles me.
Money, 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 money.
Obviously, but she's doing a good job at raising money. I mean, so few Democrats, certainly progressives, like her to begin with. I can't believe that she's doing this. There's a part of me, Jim, that thinks, like, lay off. I mean, I'd like to see her. I wouldn't mind if she was president. I wouldn't, just out of spite, I'd like to see Hillary Clinton become president. I'd like to see a woman become president, and I wouldn't mind if it was her. I personally don't think she has a chance. I personally think that if she does run, it's exactly what the Republicans want. They want nothing more than to run against a Clinton, because then they can bring back all the Bill stuff, and they can crap on her. It would be such an amazing rallying point for the right that it almost seems suspect that Murdoch is doing this. Like, it's almost a setup. Let's do this. I don't want to leave Angus hanging. He's in India, and he's probably hot. As many of you have heard, they're suffering through a terrible heat wave in India, which has led to some riots. And now with more on this story is our foreign correspondent, Angus McBarker, who's in India on assignment. What's the latest, Angus?
Mark, I'm here in Uttar Pradesh with about 1,000 protesters. And oh my God, we're basting in our juices here. It's so bloody hot. I'm practically making Angus gravy. Angus, au jus, if you will.
So, okay, Angus, how hot is it?
118 degrees. Jesus and Lamb Vindaloo. Me and all these Hindu geezers here are runny, dripping fountains of our own steaming bodily fluid. I'm disgusting, Mark. Absolutely foul. The word untouchable takes on a whole new meaning here, I promise you. Untouchable.
Well, that sounds miserable there, Angus. So what are the protests about exactly?
Right. The government wankers have been shutting off your electricity, right? During a freaking heat wave. How are we supposed to breathe, Mark? Huh?
I don't know, Angus.
I'm right, you don't know. So we're here at the gates of the electric company, taking a bit of direct action to get the air conditioner turned back on. Oh, I'm turning into a mango chutney out here.
So now, Angus, are people dehydrating?
Oh, no, Sherlock. Here's the problem. You cannot drink your own pee in this kind of heat. Personally, I'm all dried out. Cannot squeeze a drop. I'm in agony.
All right, Angus, has anybody been arrested?
Oh, yeah. Cops locked up about 18 of us or so. I got in a nice scuffle yesterday. So, I'm standing on this cop, right?
Yeah.
Oi! Bam! Freedom of the press! Right into his head. However, I did take a truncheon blow right to my mansack. Oh, it's all swollen and purple. Outstanding day.
So what's happening now at the electric plant?
Well, a lot of geezers standing around tugging their tudgers, I'm afraid. Some butt biscuit over there just suggested that we're trying to reach a non-violent solution with the electric company. Passive resistance, just like Gandhi. Total wanker. Nancy man wore a diaper. Oh, don't hit me. I'm skinny and I've got glasses. Well, bollocks to that. Oi, I've got about enough of
this. All right, Angus, don't, please don't.
Hey,
please.
Oi, Sanjay, do you want your electricity back? Or do you want to keep pulling on your kebab, eh?
Oh, boy.
Hey, right. To break down these gates, lads. Oi, you, Punjab, bring that elephant over here. Ha, 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 that's right, Jumbo.
Oh,
yes.
Oh,
yes, put your back in it, big boy. Push. Oi, oi, oi. Goal. Come on, you wanker cops. Who wants to kick Angus in his hot, sweaty ball?
Oh, all right. Well, okay. I guess that was Angus McBarker from India.
Man, what the hell?
What it sounds... He loves that stuff. He loves that. He lives for it. I he's going to end up really... he's not going to live to be an old age.
Once again, anger management.
My eyes are watering, dude. I put sunblock lotion on, and I just rubbed my eyes, and I'm, like, burning. It's, like, ridiculous. What good is that? How can you have... What?
Are you hanging out in the sun a lot?
No, it's just I tried to put this lotion on because, you know, it's sunny here, and, you know, I don't want to get skin cancer. So sometimes I'll put the lotion with the sunblock on, but every time that happens, I got to go wash my eyes out. All right, so look, folks, hang out. We got Ed Begley. Ed Begley Jr. is going to be here in a little while. Also, the editor of Walfin, the new DVD magazine from the McSweeney's people, Brent Hoff. So hang tight.
Now every one of our fish sticks is covered with a crisp crumb coating. Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you very much. That's always lovely to hear you bring me back in after a break. McSweeney's, my friends, if you don't know what it is the new cultural barometer of what is literary and aesthetically progressive and cool. They publish books, a literary magazine, The Believer, it's called. They help kids. They support artists and writers. And now they are putting out what might be the first DVD magazine, The Walfin. It is certainly an idea whose time has come, people. The editor of The Walfin, Brent Hoff, is with us on the phone. How are you, Brent?
I'm wonderful.
I really enjoyed the first two issues. Do you call them issues?
Yeah, we're calling them issues.
Well, how would you describe it? I think it's sort of like a mini fun film festival with stuff and things.
I'll take that description. I'm sure it's been described worse. Yeah, it's a mess of films.
Yeah, it is primarily films. But what was interesting to me is that in the first one, here's something that if you want to go you can link to the website from my site. I think it's walfindvd.com, right?
That's it.
Yeah, you've got Spike Jones did a little documentary on
Al Gore. You got a short film with Selma Blair. You got a short film with John C. Reilly. There's animation. There's part of a documentary on soldiers who found millions of dollars in Iraq by David O. Russell. You got this weird Turkish sitcom with several subtitle interpretations by American comedy writers. And also Patton Oswalt looking at the camera making retarded faces while the menu's in front of you. I mean, wait, but you're covering all the bases, but who do you basically think is the audience for this?
I haven't, you know, I'm the audience for it, really.
Exactly.
But I don't care about anyone else. No,
yeah.
I think anyone's the audience. I mean, it's really broad. We are just, you know, there's just all this weird stuff that we like, that we see out there that is not going to be seen any other way. We're just throwing it on.
I think it works. The one thing that I found in watching it is that you do have to sort of have a brain and have an enjoyment of short film and enjoy watching that page. And wondering how that's going to pan out. But I think the mixture of information and short film and then the animation, some of it's very provocative, very poetic. It's arty. Can I say arty?
Yeah, I'm not ashamed by that word, but yeah. Use it sparingly.
Now, I guess another question that I have is, you know, you've got big names on this. I mean, there's a short that was co-produced by Clooney, George Clooney, and Steven Soderbergh's involved. David O. Russell, you got big actors in it. Are you guys reaching out to them? Is this stuff just out there? How are you selecting this stuff?
Everything, every which way we can. Actually, uh-huh. For the Steven Soderbergh thing, we actually heard kind of through the grapevine that he was interested in making a short film for us exclusively, and then we started hounding him. I started tracking him down and you know, begging him to do that, and, and he did. So I mean, it's, you know, through various people that we know, through just going to festivals, just through submissions, people are sending us, you know, absolutely absurd stuff. A lot now, which is wonderful.
Random submissions?
Yeah. And I love random submissions. Yeah
because that'll give you an opportunity to mock the desperate regular people.
We're getting some actually really good stuff.
Okay.
And Mike Mitchell, you may know him as the awesome director of Deuce Bigelow.
Uh-huh.
He sent some amazing stuff, which is up on our website right now. So we're getting great stuff.
Well, are you? Have you gotten any plans for running reels of like the really pathetic ones that you've gotten? You know what you ought to do? Can I just say, Brent Hoff? Here's what you ought to do. You've got to get hold of somebody who books comedy. All right, maybe Patton can put you in touch with somebody.
Yeah.
There used to be a woman who booked comedy road gigs in Boston, and they get submissions of tapes of people doing stand up, and some people do it in their basement. There was one that I saw was a guy in his basement, and he had a friend at a turntable and had one of those sound effect records with laughter, and literally this guy would do a joke and you'd hear the needle plunk onto the record for the, you know, you got to get some of those.
I think that's a great idea. Once or twice, I'm telling you, that's what makes the job hard, though, is when you get about 30 or 40 of those and then suddenly watching films seems like a job. It does happen.
I squirted out a couple of tears during a couple of the short films. The big, what is it, the Big Empty, was that one? That one was sort of touching and very peculiar. But at the end, it was very touching, and you had a lot of big actors in that. I mean, that film's like 10 minutes long, and you had the guy from I don't know anything. You had the what's his name? David Kind? Is that Kind?
Yeah.
He was in it, and you had the guy who was in Crash, the Cronenberg movie.
Uh-huh.
And you had the guy who's on the famous Dr. House. Is that the name?
Yeah, there are a lot of big names. That was...
How'd you get all those big names in such a little movie?
Well, we didn't, and we didn't produce the movie, but the production company, Dan Dubecki, who was a producer of that, he managed to hook up with a casting agent from, I believe, Section 8, who helped him, you know, call Selma and get hold of Selma. Was interested in the script. It was actually an adaptation of a story that appeared in McSweeney's called The Specialist. And once Selma Blair was game to do that, then everyone else was like, absolutely.
She is
tell me
so,
when to show up.
So pretty.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I guess the name, the brand McSweeney's, is helping out too. You guys are really sort of the precious cool hipsters on the block of the world, aren't you?
Not so precious, I hope. But yeah. We are extraordinarily cool. I don't know.
Come on.
I don't know.
Now, what do you got planned? I saw, what is that thing that I've just begun watching that you couldn't see in the United States that came with the second edition?
That is a secret. That's an excerpt of a film that I would hope to DLC released here.
What's it called again?
It is called The Power of Nightmares.
Yeah, why is... Oh, so it's just a taste? It's not...
Just a taste. Just a taste to hopefully... it's an amazing film. I guess Adam Curtis, the director, they had a special screening at Cannes Film Festival for it. It's a three-hour-long documentary. It's an amazing film, and it just hasn't been seen here, and I would love to see it released, distributed somehow. And we thought maybe by putting a little taste of it on, it might inspire some conversation about it. Yeah.
Yeah, I watched 2 minutes of it. I'm like, where do I get this? So it's walfindvd.com to get on board with this thing. Before we go, what's the name mean?
Walfin. Walfin is a cross between a false killer whale and a dolphin. It's a real hybrid species that exists, and I just thought that was frigging absurd, and so I liked it.
So just the fact that I didn't know that probably makes me not cool enough to be part of it.
You need to frequent octopus cephalopod websites more often.
And I got to read The Believer more. There's so many things I got to do. I got to be nice to Dave Eggers. There's so many things. Thanks for joining us, Brian.
You bet.
Take care. Bye.
Yeah, bye.
Those McSweeney guys at it again. It is cool, though. Check it out. We got Ed Begley coming up in a second.
And now he's running on restaurant grease. Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim.
You're welcome.
I am. I got it out of the grease dumpster.
That's right. I know that.
I'm having that thing with the cat thing again. I'm having I can smell cat pee. I don't know where it's emanating from. Smelling cat pee and not knowing where it's from. Folks, here we go. His father was an Oscar-winning actor. He's been in television and movies for about 35 years, going back to a role in The Computer Who Wore Tennis Shoes. And he also appeared on Room 222, which we were talking about just a minute ago. Most of America got to know him for his role as Dr. Victor Ehrlich on St. Elsewhere. He's recently been a guest star on Arrested Development, movies like Mighty Wind, Best in Show, and my wife's favorite, that isn't even on his bio. I don't know what you think of this. Dr. Duck's Super Secret All-Purpose Sauce. Do you know anything about that, Ed Begley?
No.
You don't?
I don't remember it.
That's hilarious.
I'm not saying I didn't do it. I just don't remember it.
Let me finish the intro. He's also an environmental activist who's gained notoriety for his support of electric cars and other things. Welcome to the show, Ed.
Mark, thank you for having me on.
I'm so glad you're here. This was the weirdest thing because I'm preparing the interview of you today, and I'm sitting there with my wife, and she goes, have you seen this sketch show? It looked like something from the early 80s. It looked like a lot of Comedy Store people. I was at the Comedy Store. I was a doorman there. And you played a pope. There was a surfer pope.
Oh, okay. They took this. It was Mike Nesmith did this thing, and I can't remember what the title of that was. And they obviously took that bit and they inserted it into this show that you just spoke of. Yeah, it was called Pope. John Paul George Ringo or something. And
right.
He was the first surfer pope.
Yeah.
I forgot about it.
It was kind of funny. It was weird that I guess that... So someone just put together their own video of pieces of other stuff.
Pieces of other stuff. Yeah, I remember doing that. 1980 we did it. Yeah, 80 or 81.
It was so weird seeing those people because when I first started doing... I started as a stand-up like in 86 or so. I guess I was a doorman at the Comedy Store in 87. And there's that wall of names there.
Yeah.
Yours is on there, and I didn't know. Did you do stand-up?
I did. Michael Richards and I had a duo back in the late 60s and early 70s. Then he went off in the Army, and I was all alone. I went, maybe I'll try my hand solo stand-up. And I did it for years, and he came back, and we tried it again, and he went on to be Kramer and many other wonderful things, a great comedian, great actor. But I did it for years. I did the Troubadour lot, Comedy Store,
right.
Max's Kansas City, the
really?
Bottom line, colleges, concerts, clubs, yeah.
So you did it for a while. You had a whole act and you went out
through
on the road.
70s. I had, it was the 70s. A lot of drug humor, you know. I had an LAPD uniform. That's what I started with. That was my opening bit. So you can imagine what this was like.
That's great. I had no idea because it's so weird when you come into comedy later and you see all those names on the wall of people like Craig T. Nelson. I had no idea he did stand-up.
Yeah, that with guy. Rudy DeLuca, he had an act, I believe, with Rudy DeLuca, who writes with Mel Brooks, right?
I love that kind of stuff. I love that kind of history. So now, I want to talk a little bit about growing up in Hollywood, because you spent your whole life here, right?
Yeah, I was born at Hollywood Presbyterian Hospital, came home to a little home in Van Nuys,
mm-hmm.
and I live probably 6 miles from where I grew up, you know, in Van Nuys. So I'm still in the valley, and I love it here. You can find a parking space, like I did right in front of the studio here. I found a parking space.
Isn't that beautiful?
I love it.
Yeah. Now, your dad was a big actor, so does that mean you grew up hanging around with Hollywood big actors or what?
No, he was an odd duck. He had friends from, like, the wire mold plant in Hartford, you know, factory workers.
Yeah.
He was a factory worker that made it late in life as an actor. He wanted to be an actor his whole life. Didn't see any success or any action really till he was in his 40s, late 40s, started to get really more successful in his 50s and 60s. So he had a lot of, you know, old friends from...
Regular people.
And finally, when I was like 16, he started hanging out with Debbie Reynolds, you know, who played Tammy. And
yeah,
she was,
yeah,
you know, Unsinkable Molly Brown. They did a movie together. He played her dad in Unsinkable Molly Brown. Like, wow, we're going to Debbie Reynolds' house. And
yeah.
I met Carrie Fisher, her daughter. And wow, it was exciting. These Hollywood people suddenly.
And it just happened like in the middle of your teens. That's probably a good time for it to happen.
Yeah.
Because then you get to appreciate it a little bit.
Yeah. How old were you when you did 12 Angry Men?
I was a very young man. I think I was 5 or 6, a young boy. And I didn't see it till many years later.
Oh, okay.
And didn't appreciate it all, you know, any of it. I didn't really know. I knew my dad was an actor, but I thought, oh, he's some actor. He's just some guy. You know, who's your favorite actor? Oh, John Wayne's my favorite actor. He's a great actor. My dad, what does he do? I didn't think he did anything. I had no appreciation of my father till I was in my late teens, maybe early 20s. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I fully appreciated his work till I was in my 20s.
I feel the same about my dad. I'm still waiting to appreciate him as deeply as I can, you know?
Yeah.
It's hard when it's your dad. You know, other people are like, God, he's the greatest. And you're like, he's my dad.
Yeah, he's my dad.
Yeah, he's all right. So you seem to be in this community of comedic actors, very well respected. You always seem to show up in these great films with Christopher Guest. You did Arrested Development. Is that just by virtue of the fact that you've known these guys for years and you all know each other as being funny and you know each other's groove and that you call each other on the phone? I've always, like, you and Christopher Guest, are you guys buddies?
I became friends with Christopher years ago. I knew his sister Alyssa Guest.
Yeah.
And I met him and whatnot. This is a guy who did Radio Dinner and, you know, Lemmings, I think, and all these other shows. I mean, this wonderful, you know, brilliant writer, performer. Wow, I'm meeting him. It was very exciting for me even back then. And so he came and saw my insane stand-up act and somehow found something kind to say about it.
In the 70s.
In the 70s. And he and I remained friends for years. And then he did... they did Spinal Tap, and they asked me to play a small part in that.
You were the first drummer.
I was, Stumpy Joe Pete. I die in a bizarre gardening accident.
Right, right. And then you were just in Mighty Wind playing the extremely goyish guy who speaks Yiddish.
Right, exactly. The goyish guy who's trying to ingratiate himself to Mr. Steinblum by peppering his conversation with lots of Yiddish.
And how much of that stuff is improvised?
It was all improvised. It was an insane idea that just happened on the set, and Chris, of all people, you know, he allowed it. The fact that he would allow me to do that.
You came up with the Yiddish thing?
Yeah.
That was so twisted.
I mean, how many sets can you do that, though? I mean, how many directors would allow you that? Most people that take off the headphones that come over there, Ed, what are you doing?
Yeah, yeah.
You're a Swedish-American guy. Why are you talking Yiddish? It doesn't make any sense. The audience isn't going to understand. Do it again. Talk Swedish if you want, but don't.
The commitment to it was hilarious.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. So, in Arrested Development, working with Liza Minnelli, was that weird?
It was huge.
Yeah.
Huge for me. I know her. I've known her for years.
Yeah.
We're both, you know, sons and daughters of famous people. She's the daughter of a very famous person.
The director. And two famous people, really.
Exactly.
Yeah.
She's the daughter of two famous ones. And we've known each other a while, and I don't think we'd ever worked together till that.
Uh-huh.
You know, I love that show. I'm a big fan of the show long before I was ever on it, and then got a chance to work on it. Jeffrey Tambor is a very good friend of mine. He's pretty good.
He's a funny guy, too.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
That's about as good as it gets, I think, Jeffrey Tambor.
Oh, yeah. Dave Cross, too.
Dave Cross.
I lived with Dave Cross years ago. He used to let me sleep on his couch. We're a different generation of comedic weirdos. You know, it seems like every generation of comics, they all sort of engage, you know, they all kind of intermingle somehow.
They do.
Yeah, it's very interesting. So let's talk about a little bit about what's going on with your activism. I know that you became very famous for, like, really the first electric car, it seems. Is that true?
Well, Henry Ford's wife actually preferred her electric car to his noisy kerosene vehicle. They ran on kerosene at first and then gasoline later. So, you know, electric cars have been around for a while. But I bought my first one in 1970. I was just fed up with the smog.
You know?
I was fed up with the smog in 1971. I'm gonna, I know it's a small thing, but I'm going to be part of the solution rather than part of the problem in my small way. And I drove one for a while, but they were very slow back then. They went 15 miles an hour. It was basically a golf cart with a windshield wiper and a horn.
So you're driving around Hollywood then?
Yeah. Mostly the valley. To get over the Cuenca Pass into Hollywood was no small feat.
I bet.
You know, and so it was a real hazard on the road. I mean, it really went to top speed of 15 miles an hour. The range was about 15 miles. Mm-hmm. So it was, you know, not for the road. It was for a retirement community. They were, you know.
They make those now. They're very popular. They go a little faster.
Yeah, they go 25 at least or 30 or something.
Which
is 15 is ridiculous.
Which is, it's scary for those retirees to be whipping around at 25.
I know.
So Yeah, I actually saw you walking down the street at, out here in the valley, and I thought, well, that's a guy who's definitely environmentally conscious. No one walks.
I walk everywhere. I live in Studio City, a neighborhood
that's
designed to, you know, go to the restaurant, go to the bank, go to the post office. You can walk and live in an area where there's lots of commerce and there's lots of homes. And so there are, you know, other neighborhoods like that. The Crenshaw District is like that. Larchmont is like that. Montana. You know,
Yeah, sure.
There are some neighborhoods left, and they're good things.
Yeah, absolutely. There's let's talk about it in a minute. So you got we're talking to Ed Bigley Jr. We're going to talk about environmentalism, walking in Los Angeles, and communities and why they're important. Is that okay, Jim?
And steam cars.
Steam? Oh, really?
Yeah. Those I want to ask him about steam.
I don't think it's practical. All right, we'll be back in a second.
We'll talk.
All right.
Guaranteed not to hurt your pipes. Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim. We're here with Ed Bigley Jr. Ed Bigley Jr. talking about stuff. We're going to talk about steam cars in a minute, but all of a sudden I've been sucked back into the vortex of 70s Hollywood. That had to have been the best time ever.
It was a lot of fun. I guess I technically wasn't really there because I remember all of it. So, you know.
But there was all those parties in the hills, and you were talking
about...
Yeah,
lots of parties. Good parties.
Doing that thing with Michael Nesmith and having him... Now, he made all his money on liquid paper or something, right?
His mother invented liquid paper, yes.
He was a guitar player for the Monkees, but that was sort of a Hollywood creation.
Yeah.
And then he produced things.
Yeah, but he wrote some good songs. He wrote, you know, that Stone Pony song and what have you that Linda Ronstadt had a hit with. With a different drum, and he's a good writer, of
scripts. You still talk to him?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
How's he doing?
Doing good.
Yeah?
Living in New Mexico. Wonderful guy.
Oh, I grew up in New Mexico. He lives out there just hanging out?
Yeah, he's somewhere near where they had that accident, the nuclear lab, Los Alamos.
Oh, is that by Los Alamos? Yeah.
Somewhere near there.
It's pretty country. So, like, in what was the greatest thing that ever happened, like, in that time, in the 70s? Like, in your memory in show business, what stands out as one of the great moments for you?
Anything I just remember going to the Troubadour in those days, and you could go and sit front row center, and a new performer by the name of Bette Midler would come. And
right.
Who is she? And, oh, my God, she's great. And, you know, Tom Waits would be there. You'd be... This close as
like
I am to you,
he was 20 years old.
Yeah. And we would hang out together and go to bars together and drink together, and you'd sit this close to Joni Mitchell and Richard Pryor would come and do a set there at the Troubadour, and George Carlin Hicks and his Hot Licks and you know, great people. I opened for Canned Heat there, Don McLean, Dave Mason, Neil Sedaka. You know,
so they did a lot of comedy at the Troubadour, huh?
They did,
huh? So, yeah, now let's get back to steam cars, Jim. Go ahead.
Well, I just want to add, on your website, you said, before that, on your website, you said you've reduced your waste, you know, to the size of one glove compartment per week.
That was when I was single, Jim. I've got a family now.
A lot of garbage.
There's three of us, so we're doing about three glove compartments a week. But when I was single is when that L.A. Times article came out. The woman knocked on my door, you know, and said, Mr. Begley, I want to see your week's worth of trash because tomorrow is a pickup day. And she was pretty good. It was a good article. It was funny. And it was because I had mouthed off at the County Board of Supervisors. Why do we need this landfill? We could recycle. Why I only throw out, and I picked a size just out of my head. I went, a glove compartment's worth of trash a week. You know, it seemed about what it was.
Yeah.
And she comes knocking my door saying, I want to see if your trash can fit in. Isn't today's Tuesday and tomorrow's Wednesday the pickup? Let's see if it actually fits. I went, okay, I'll take my lumps and my praise. Let's see. And she was a very funny article. It was Actor Crams for Test.
And did you?
So I'm actually like cramming it in with my feet. But it fit. And I had this little tiny VW Rabbit converted to electric. The smallest glove box you've ever seen in a VW Rabbit. Check it out. It's
okay.
Small.
Yeah.
But it all fit.
Wait, how the hell do you do that? Because I produce more garbage than a small city.
I was single then. Now, you know, I've got, you know, I've got a child. I've got a wife. It's different. But
what about takeout? You're single. That should be takeout.
I wasn't doing takeout. I grew a lot of food in the backyard. I'd go, you know, I'd eat stuff on plates. And
yeah.
I would pre-cycle a lot. By that, I mean buy stuff that had very little packaging and buy in bulk.
Uh-huh.
It was a thing with me. I wanted to throw away. My goal was to throw away nothing in a week. I never got there, but I got down to the point every week. It was about a glove compartment's worth.
By throwing away nothing, you mean recycling things and using compost and all that
exactly.
kind of thing?
I would compost a lot, recycle a lot, and then what was left after all that would be about a glove compartment.
Do you still do it?
I do all that. I recycle all that, compost all that, but there's more of us in the house, and my wife isn't quite as much for recycling or pre-cycling as I am,
uh-huh.
But I find ways, you know, I sell this Begley's Best product now, so when she, you know, she doesn't take the canvas bags in the store the way I do. She just, it's not going to happen. So she gets these plastic bags. Finally, I've given up fighting on that one. I collect them, and I use them to put my stuff in when I sell my stuff at Studio City Farmers Market. I said, do you mind a recycle bag? Everybody says, no, I don't mind at all.
So just a bag from shopping or whatever?
A bag from shopping. You know, clean bag. It can't be a bag that you had a bunch of stuff in it. It's got to be a clean bag.
Yeah.
And you put it in a clean bag, and everybody's happy.
So you're basically running a farm out of your backyard in some
respect? No, it's a little.
What do you,
you know,
take to the farmer's market?
To the farmer's market, I take my Begley's Best cleaning supplies. I have these non-toxic cleaning supplies that I sell. They sell at Whole Foods, Wild Oats, Erewhon, Lassen's, and now I also sell them at the Studio City Farmer's Market. I have a little booth, and I sell natural soap that is manufactured in Simi Valley by some friends of mine.
Glycerin soap?
It's natural, no animal products, no petroleum products. It's all natural, vegetable, plant-based stuff.
Okay.
And it's really nice soap.
Yeah.
And I sell that, and I sell spray, you know, like non-toxic glass cleaner and non-toxic household cleaner.
What's in that?
In the non-toxic glass cleaner, the discount one is basically this acetic compound derived from grains, all natural. You can spray that in your mouth. I do that as a demonstration. I spray it right in my mouth. It's so safe.
They must be so thrilled just to see you there.
Yeah, they are. Whatever works.
And on top of that, you're spraying stuff in your mouth to prove a point. That's got to be a highlight.
So you can't even get high off this cleaner.
You can't. Then I got another. I got a premium glass cleaner that has some alcohol. You don't want to spray that in if you're a sober person, which I am. You know, that's got some alcohol.
You're not going to believe who we saw at the farmer's market. You know that fella used to be on the doctor show? He's there spraying cleaner in his mouth.
Yep.
You got to go with me next week. I don't know why the hell he's doing it.
Who knows? Must be crazy. I'm trying to do, it's a little Newman's Own kind of a thing I'm trying to do here, to give the money to charity. We've been open a year, this Begley's Best company.
Mm-hmm.
We've generated, you know, paltry $28,000 in sales, but we've given $3,600 to Rainforest Action Network, Midnight Mission, Humane Society of the U.S., on and on, environmental groups, of every stripe. We've given away $3,600, more than 10% of our gross.
Now, is there a separate website for this? I'm sorry, Jim, because I went to edbegley.com, and maybe I didn't look for the marketing. Is there a separate website for the Begley product?
Yeah, it's called begleysbest.com.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, there's a store link on there.
Yeah,
I know, but I didn't. Mr. So-and-so did his homework today. You're all proud of yourself.
It's made
huh?
out of pomegranate seeds and stuff.
Exactly.
It's great.
Oh, good. Go ahead, ask him some more questions. This guy's right up your alley.
What's your car of choice? What did you drive today?
Today I drove, my number one vehicle of choice is my bike. I prefer that. But today I didn't have time. I have to go somewhere right after. I have my electric car, which I charge in the sun. I have a lot of solar panels in my house, so it's 100% clean, not just the tailpipe, but clean in the power generation, electric car. And then when I have to go longer trips, like to Santa Barbara or to Pittsburgh, I take my wife's hybrid, which gets great mileage, gets 60 miles per gallon.
You drive to Pittsburgh?
I drove to Pittsburgh to do a play with Jeff Goldblum, and it cost me $90 to get there, which is cheaper than Priceline.com. It's not just the environment, Mark. I'm cheap, okay?
Okay, finally we get to the bottom of it.
I'm a cheap person.
That guy Goldblum, he's a little quirky, isn't he?
He's great. He's great. And we filmed a movie about the whole experience. That's his hometown, Pittsburgh.
Really?
Going back to his hometown, we filmed a movie called Pittsburgh. It was the, I think, one of the opening films at the Tribeca Film Festival. Did very well.
Did it?
Yeah, it's called Pittsburgh, and I'm in that. It's documentary of his returning to Pittsburgh.
Oh, that's kind of interesting. So, Jim, I think you and Ed should be friends. You're like, you should be his hero. You're living the life that he wants to live.
This guy is the pinnacle of this type of thinking, this type of way of life. It's great.
Well, you're very kind. Thank you.
Does it make you feel better?
You know, it does. It's not just the environment. All this stuff, I'll confess, I did, I suppose, for the environment. But now it's been so good for my bottom line. By that I mean, it's not like I'm rich. I'm not a millionaire. I don't have a lot of money in the bank.
Yeah.
But I don't need to be rich because I don't need a lot of money.
I
don't have an electric bill to speak of. I don't buy much gasoline. I don't use a lot of natural gas to heat my house or to cool it or to, you know, heat my water. My water is all heated by the sun. I cook out in the sun in my solar oven, you know, a lot.
Okay, let's start at the top of the list then.
Okay.
So you don't pay any heating bills or electric bills because you got panels.
I got a lot of panels, and I'm very well insulated. I have a natural gas bill, but it's very low because I do most of my heating of water with the sun, and I am well insulated. But
the computer and stuff, you pay the electricity.
I pay very little. When I was single, I used about $100 worth of power in a year. I signed up for the Green Power program, so even that was green power. Now that I'm married, this whole 68 in the winter, 78 in the summer ain't going to fly anymore, Mark, okay?
Yeah,
it's like
yeah.
the trash. Things have changed.
Yeah, yeah. Women want to be comfortable.
Exactly.
Yes.
So it's like 72 year-round, but since it's well-insulated, it doesn't take that much to do it.
What about the computer and the TiVo and the...
All that stuff. I don't have a TiVo, but I have other stuff, and, you know, there's more people in the house, there's more laundry.
Right.
So I use about $600 a year worth of Green Power, the Green Power for Green LA, and to charge a car... To run a house, to run my wife's business, she's got a little business there at the house, and on, to run my business, Begley's Best, two businesses, one car charging, one house, and a child, that's pretty good for $600 a year.
Jeez. That's unbelievable. So wait, is there a how-to on the website? Like, how do you live like Ed Begley?
Well, the how-to, the one thing I kind of cheated, back when I had money, I had a TV series, I bought a hell of a lot of solar panels. I couldn't afford that today, but now, you know, I'm the recipient of this largesse for the rest of my life because these panels don't break down. There's no moving parts. You know, they're just up there on the roof generating power.
Why the hell don't we all... I know that Britain's doing it. Why the hell don't we do that here? Why aren't more people alerted to this or do it or make it happen if it's that accessible?
Anybody that could afford it. And you don't have to buy, as I did, a sailboat to weather the storm of energy uncertainty. You can buy a dinghy or a life vest. By that, I mean you can buy just a kilowatt of solar or like three panels just to run a few things, you know, two or three panels. You could do that cheaply at realgoods.com or you go to my website and I'll turn people on to any of this stuff they want. There's good solar installers in the San Fernando Valley and in this region. Go to edbegley.com if anybody wants and I'll tell them some how to.
All right. Well, there you go. There's an open invitation. I want to do this kind of stuff, and I also feel ashamed of the amount of waste we produce on some level, but my wife comes from hippie parents, and there's a spite there. I think she likes her parents, but she grew up with the compost bin and the bugs in the kitchen and everything being cool and connected.
You can't have bugs in the kitchen. I'm not down with the bugs in the kitchen thing.
So you move your compost right outside.
Yeah, I've got a compost thing right outside the door,
and
we just don't have bugs in the house. Keep it tidy and you're fine.
Right, but you don't have anything against bugs.
No, bugs are fine. I'm not out spraying them with pesticides and stuff. We don't, no pesticides. I mean, bugs are fine. I invite them into my compost pile. You need them. I need grub worms.
Come on down.
I need all the many bugs that gobble up the compost, because I compost everything that, you know, doesn't go in the green bin. I put all the twiggy big stuff in the green bin, everything else, the table scraps, the grass clippings, the leaves. Not that I have so much grass. I took my lawn out when I moved in. There's a little piece of it on the parkway left that the city insists you maintain. But other than that, I took out all the lawn, put in all drought tolerant, put in fruit trees. I grow a lot of my food on site. So it's a good way to live because it's long-term prosperity.
And also it seems to be a great outlet for OCD.
Exactly. For a guy like me, bada-bing.
There you go. Well, I'm inspired. Thank you so much for sharing all this wisdom with us, Ed Begley. And if you want to go to edbegley.com, he said he'll help you out. So do that. And I wish you the best of luck with everything else.
Mark, Jim, you guys too. Thanks a lot for having me on.
Okay, man.
Hear that baby crying? Is the house on fire? Who cares? Because right after this break, Mark's going to read his short order news. So sit down and shut up.
Now back to a man who uses the awesome cleaning power of Bagley's Best, the best all-natural cleaner for your home, Mark Maron.
That guy is your hero. He's your new hero.
New hero. He's always been my hero. You know, sure, you make all those jokes about the electric car and riding his bike everywhere, but
yeah, I don't think I heard any jokes come out of my mouth.
Collective you, you know, stand-up comics, you funny guys, you know, funny shorts and all that stuff.
You know what I like about what you just said?
What's that?
That you no longer consider yourself one. You're out. You're out.
I'm a humorist. I'm a stand-up humorist. I get up there with a stool and a glass of water and a couple newspapers.
Come on. So, look, I hold
a mirror up to society.
I know you do.
It's like Manson did.
It's one of those wacky, goofy mirrors. The absurd mirror. It's like, hey, look, I'm not really that fat and weird. Look, I'm stretching. Look, I'm stretching. One of those.
See, you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, now my head's really big and I look like a midget. Like one of those guys. One of those mirrors.
Oh, you went too far again.
Oh, sorry. I went too far? Look, I was very impressed with him, and I would like to live like that a little more. I would. And the garbage thing is fascinating to me.
Garbage, you know, we just gotta know what to do with all your stuff.
Well, why don't you come over and pick it up?
I may have to, but when I get a starter house.
I went to yoga again last night, and I found myself. The teacher. One of the guys in the class was his birthday, and he was 50 or 49. So the teacher made us do like 49 of these things, these vinyasas, these flow things, 49 of them in an hour and a half time. It was horrendous. And I never found myself having so much contempt for somebody's birthday. Literally, the guy, like about halfway through, I'm sweating, I'm in pain, I can't breathe. It's overworking all of us for health reasons. But and it's just because of this guy's birthday, and I hate him. I hated him before. He's one of those, I shouldn't say that because they might listen. There's an outside chance. I didn't hate him. He's just, he's just...
You resent him.
I resent him because...
the power.
He's one of those guys who looks like every ounce of all of his energy goes into trying not to look old. And I find that kind of vanity kind of disturbing.
But he has a strange power over you.
Because of my resentment?
Yes.
That's true. Anybody you have that much weird, unfounded resentment for? I'd like to apologize to my wife publicly right now for my behavior last night. I felt guilty. I felt guilty that my neighbors probably heard me screaming, and I don't like to raise my voice like that. It's literally, I lose control. That's the feeling I have. I think I need help. I think I need anger management. I'm serious. I'm not lying. Do you know anybody who's ever gone to anger management?
Gosh, no, I don't. Strangely enough, I don't.
Well, what the hell is wrong with you?
Well, I'll tell you.
Damn it, Jim. I'm just trying to get... Jesus, man. Every stupid question I ask, you can't come up with a damn answer? Uh-huh. What the hell good are you? God.
Well, I am hearing.
God.
Yes, I'm hearing. I think I understand what you're saying.
Man.
So... What exactly are you feeling right now?
Man, just forget it. See, I feel bad. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to yell. See, that's what I'm talking about.
I know you're not yelling at me. You're yelling at the concept of me.
No, I need to. I am serious, though. I'm serious about anger management. Sometimes, like, literally, I'm on the phone with her. I'm getting mad at her. And then she does this thing where, like, I'm in the car. It's best if I'm on the phone yelling, let's finish it while I'm in the car. Let's finish it. All right? It's better when you're having a fight on the phone because then you get it out of the way. But what does she choose to do? The hang-up tactic. Not good when you're mad, all right? So I'm on the phone yelling, getting into it, trying to get the tears rolling, all right? And then it's like, no, bad. So then I call back. Nope, won't answer. So now there's 7 messages of me going, come on, pick up. Pick up the phone, all right? So then... Then all of a sudden
you're not supposed to hang up on those situations.
That's exactly right. So what happens is then I start to panic like she's going to split. So now I'm almost killing myself to get home so I can cut her off from splitting the house from me coming home and yelling. And then it turns out she's there and she acts like nothing happened, which is the worst. And I'm saying things like, open the door. Open the door.
On the other hand, you're not supposed to be having conversations on the phone while you're driving.
Oh man, I need help. A lot happened in the news today. We don't want you to be caught off guard or uninformed. So here's tonight's second edition of the Short Order News. While visiting Florida today, President Bush said that the GOP will retain control of Congress, and he'd like to see his brother Jeb become president. Bush said he'd like to see his family's White House legacy continue, with his younger brother Jeb as the chief executive, and eventually leading into a series of unending wars between Oceania and East Asia, followed by institution of a monthly hate week and a construction of thousands of cheap labor facilities called joy camps. That sounds familiar. Is that from something? Hey, new data shows a significant increase in the practice of oral and anal sex among American teens and the young. That's all the information I have because I finished before getting through the whole article. Eh?
Yeah, 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 you were doing your job.
All right. American, let's not over-explain it, hence I've become pervy weird guy. American troops have complained that a new armored bodysuit designed to be worn in Iraq makes them look goofy. But come to think of it, nothing can make a soldier look goofier than being sent into a war they can't win. That's a reflector. You know, that's the short order news for tonight.
A reflector?
Yeah, that's one of those jokes where people go,
A reflector.
Huh. Like they're going to reflect on it a little bit.
Did you go to stand-up comedy classes?
Never.
You never went to one of these, hey, I'm going to teach you how to...
Never.
Mic technique. And
never.
How to address an audience and all that
never.
Stuff?
You learn from watching. You learn from desire. You get out there and you do it. I know people who take classes. Scott, what's his name? Oh, God.
Caparo?
No, the guy from... He's been on our show, Scott Blakeman.
Blakeman.
He teaches a class. John Stewart took it. Caroline Ray took it.
Oh, Stewart. Yeah.
What? Those... Oh, no. I just don't... I don't think it's right. I think...
Yeah, you can't teach something like that.
Oh, wait, tomorrow's show. Man, what's going on? Oh, George Saunders, the author. He's a very, very talented
author,
actually. No, author. Professor Keith Wattenpah. That's a real name. Keith Wattenpah. About being modern in the Middle East. Andy Ostroy is going to call us about Rove. Good night, sheeple. Please, good night. Please.